snakes. You can't turn your back on them. She isn't like that. And what's the big deal to you anyway? I'm the one who got tortured. What do you even know about that? Kevin just stared at him, deadpan, for one moment, then pointed with his secured left hand to his secured left foot. He wiggled his four toes. It took a few seconds for comprehension to hit, and then Daniel sucked in a horrified gasp. Amateurs, she scoffed from the ceiling.
I don't know, Kevin said coolly. They seem pretty good to me.
Did they get what they were after? He made a disbelieving noise in the back of his throat.
Are you kidding?
She raised one eyebrow. Like I said.
And you could have made me talk.
Her lips pulled into a bleak smile. Oh, yes. Out of the corner of her eye, she saw Daniel shudder convulsively. The dog was quiet now, but still alert underneath her. It seemed unsure of the situation, with its master talking so calmly to its target.
Hey, I know who you are, Kevin said suddenly. Yeah, the girl. I heard rumors about you. Exaggerations. They said you'd never had a miss. You were batting 1,000.
Not an exaggeration. His expression was skeptical.
You worked with the old guy. The mad scientist, they called him. The agency called you the Oleander. Honestly, I didn't put it together at first because I heard you both died in some lab accident. And also, I always imagined the Oleander was pretty.
Daniel started to say something, but she interrupted. Oleander? That's just awful.
Huh?
A flower? She growled to herself. That's so passive. A poison doesn't do the poisoning. It's just an inert agent.
What did your unit call you?
The chemist. And Dr. Barnaby was not a mad scientist. He was a genius.
Tomato, tomato, Kevin said. Back to the truce I was speaking of, Daniel interjected.
The way he looked at her hands and arms, she thought he might have guessed how much they were hurting her.
Alex will give me the keys, and Kevin, you will call off Einstein. When I think everything is under control, I'll let you out. Alex, do you trust me?
He looked up at her with his wide, clear hazel eyes, while Kevin spluttered in inarticulate fury. The keys are in the left front pocket of my jeans. I'd hand them to you, but if I loosen my hands, I'll fall.
Be careful! She'll stab you!
Daniel didn't even seem to have heard his brother's warning. When he climbed onto the chair, his head was actually higher up than hers. He had to stoop, his head pressed against the foam roof. He put one hand under her back, supporting some of her weight, while he fished gently in her pocket for the key.
I'm sorry my brother is so socially inept, he whispered. He's always been that way. Don't you apologize for me, you moron, Kevin yelled.
Daniel smiled at her, then took the key and stepped down. She was actually in agreement with Kevin. How could Daniel be like this with her? Where was the totally natural resentment? Where was the human desire for retribution?
I've got the keys, Kev. Do you have a lead for the dog? A lead? Einstein doesn't need a leash.
What's your suggestion, then? Kevin glared at him balefully.
Fine. I'd rather kill her myself, anyway.
He whistled at the dog.
At ease, Einstein.
The dog, who had followed Daniel anxiously as he approached Alex, now went calmly to its master's head and sat down, his tongue lolling out in what appeared to be a smile, a very toothy smile.
Let me out. Ladies first.
Daniel climbed up on the chair again and offered her his hand.
Need some help?
I think I've got it.
She dropped her legs toward the desk, her arms extending as she tried to touch down with her toes. How had she gotten up here? Her tired hands started to slip.
Here you go.
Daniel caught her by the waist as she fell and set her carefully on her feet, one on the desk, the other with a clang in the middle of the prop tray. His blanket skirt loosened. He quickly grabbed the fabric and tightened it.
I can't believe this, Kevin muttered.
Alex stood cautiously, watching the dog.
If he tries anything, Daniel murmured to her, I'll distract him. Dogs love me. Einstein isn't stupid, Kevin growled. Let's not find out. Now your turn. He climbed down from the chair and crouched beside Kevin. Alex slithered off the desk as quietly as she could, one hand reaching out for the keyboard. The dog didn't respond. It was watching Daniel release its master. She opened the system preferences. Screensaver wasn't the only way to release the sleeping gas, and she still had both masks. But she knew that would just make things difficult. She would have to trust that Daniel could handle Kevin, for now. She eased herself into the chair. Daniel had started with the ankle, and it was going slowly. He was keeping one hand on his blanket.
Just give it to me. I'll do it, Kevin said. Be patient.
Kevin huffed loudly. The key turned, and Kevin was immediately on his feet, crouching beside his tethered arm. He snatched the key from Daniel's hand and had his wrist free in less than a second. He stood tall, stretching his neck and rolling his back muscles. The torso pieces of his bat suit hung down like an avant-garde skirt. The dog kept still at his feet. Kevin turned to Alex.
Where are my guns?
Backseat of the car. Kevin stalked out of the tent without another word, the dog at his heels. Don't open any doors or windows, she called after him. Everything's armed again.
Is the car booby-trapped?
He called back. No. A second later.
Where are the magazines? Hey, where are the firing pins?
Pins in the fridge, bullets in the toilet.
Oh, come on!
Sorry.
I want my Sig Sauer back.
She frowned and didn't answer. She got up stiffly. She might as well disarm the traps. It was time to go. Daniel was standing in the middle of the tent, staring down at the silver table. He had one hand wrapped around the IV pole as if for support. He seemed to be in a daze. She went hesitantly to stand beside him. Are you going to be okay? She asked.
I have no idea. I can't understand what I'm supposed to do next.
Your brother will have a plan. He's been living somewhere. He'll have a place for you. He looked down at her.
Is it hard?
What?
Running. Hiding.
She opened her mouth to say something soothing, then thought better of it. Yeah, it's pretty hard. You get used to it. The worst part is the loneliness, and you won't have to deal with that, so that's one minor plus. She kept to herself the thought that loneliness might be a better companion than Kevin Beach.
Are you lonely a lot?
She tried to laugh it off. Only when I'm not scared, so no, not too often.
Have you decided yet what you're going to do next?
No. The face is a problem. I can't walk around like this. People will remember me, and that's not safe. I'll have to hide somewhere until the swelling goes down and the bruises fade enough to cover with makeup.
Where do you hide? I don't understand how this works.
I may have to camp out for a while. I've got a bunch of subsistence food and plenty of water. By the way, don't drink the water in the fridge without checking with me first. The left side is poisoned. Anyway, I may just find some place remote and sleep in the car until I've recuperated enough. He blinked a couple of times, probably thrown by the poison thing. Maybe we can do something about your problem with conspicuousness, she said more lightly, touching his blanket with one finger. I think there might be some clothes up at the house. I doubt they'll fit you, but they're better than what you've got. A wave of relief passed over his face.
I know it's a small thing, but I think that would actually help quite a bit.
Okay, let me go turn off the lethal gas trap. In the end, she did surrender the Sig Sauer, although with some regret. She liked its weight. She'd have to find her own. The farmhouse owner's belongings were stashed in the attic in a set of dressers from 6 or 7 decades back. The man was obviously a lot shorter and wider than Daniel. She left Daniel to sort that out while she went back to the barn to pack up the car. Kevin was there when she entered, tightly rolling a big swath of black fabric into a manageable armload. It took her a moment to realize the fabric was a parachute. She kept her distance as he worked, but the truce felt solid. For some reason, Daniel had put himself between her and his brother's animosity. Neither she nor Kevin understood why he was doing it, but Kevin cared too much about Daniel to violate his trust today.
not when he was still reeling over years of lies. Or that's what she told herself to muster up the courage needed to walk past the dog to her car. She was an old hand at packing, and it didn't take her very long. When she'd come out to meet Karsten, she'd stowed her things and dismantled the security at the rental house, just in case she didn't make it back. One of her nightmares was that the department would get her while she was out, and then some innocent, unsuspecting landlord would enter the premises and die. She'd stashed everything outside D.C., then come back for it when she'd started setting up for Project Interrogate the Schoolteacher. Now she fitted it all into the worn black duffels. The pressurized canisters, the miles of lead wires, the battery packs, the rubber-encased vials of components, the syringes, the goggles, the heavy gloves, her pillow, and her sleeping bag. She packed her props and some of the new things she'd picked up. The restraints were a good find, and the cot was decently comfortable and folded down into a small rectangle. She put her computer in its case, grabbed the little black box that was just a red herring, like her locket, pulled down the long cables, and rolled up the extension cords. She was going to have to leave the lights, which was a bummer. They hadn't been cheap. She dismantled the tent, leaving just a pile of meaningless foam and PVC pipe, and shoved the table back to where she'd found it. There wasn't anything to do about the holes she'd drilled. She could only hope that she'd obfuscated things enough that the owners would only be confused and angry at the destruction rather than suspicious that something nefarious had happened here. There was a chance they'd report their destructive tenant to the authorities, but local police wouldn't be able to construe anything from the mess either. As long as certain words didn't go into the report, there was no reason for anyone in the government to notice. She was sure there were Airbnb stories of destruction much more interesting than this one. She shook her head at the door to the bunk room. The dog had chewed or clawed a hole 2 feet high and a foot wide right through the center of the solid wood door. At least it had only jumped over the car rather than eating it on its way out. She was finished loading the trunk when Daniel came back in.
"Nice caprice," Kevin commented, winding the cable of his grappling hook into a neat coil.
Alex wondered if he'd climbed back up onto the roof to retrieve it, and if he had, how she'd missed that. It was true that Daniel's pants made it only halfway down his shins. The cotton shirt was a few sizes wide, and the sleeves were probably too short as well. He had them rolled to the elbows.
"If only I had half a wetsuit," Daniel sighed, "then I would feel ready to face the world."
Kevin grunted.
"I'd have a whole wetsuit if the psycho wasn't such a perv."
"Don't flatter yourself. I was looking for weapons." Daniel watched her close the trunk.
"Are you leaving?"
"Yes. I need to get somewhere safe so I can sleep." She imagined she looked haggard enough that the explanation was a little redundant.
"I was thinking," Daniel said, and then hesitated.
Kevin looked up from his rifle, alerted by Daniel's tone.
"What were you thinking?"
Kevin asked suspiciously.
"Well, I was thinking about the scorpions in the jar. Alex said there were only two outcomes. One kills the other, or both die. And I imagine that the people who wanted to kill you thought the same thing." "So?" Kevin said.
"So, there was a third option," she said, guessing the direction Daniel was headed. "The scorpions walk away. They won't be expecting that. That's what will make you safe, Daniel."
"But there's a fourth option, too," Daniel answered. "That's what I've been thinking about."
Kevin cocked his head to the side. He clearly didn't get it. She did, just before Daniel said the words out loud.
"What if the scorpions join forces?"
She pursed her lips, then relaxed them when that pulled at the split. Kevin groaned.
"Stop messing around, Danny. I'm serious. They'd never expect that. And then we're twice as safe because we've got both dangerous creatures on the same team." "Not happening."
She walked closer to him. "It's a clever idea, Daniel. But I think some of the personnel issues might be too big to overcome."
"Kev's not so bad. You'll get used to him."
"I'm not bad?"
Kevin snorted, peering through his sights. Daniel looked straight at her.
"You're thinking about going back, aren't you?" What you said about visiting the pantry?
Insightful for a civilian. I'm considering it. Kevin was giving them his full attention now.
Counter-strike?
It might work, she said. There's a pattern. And after looking at it, I think that maybe not so many people know about me. That's why they're going to such lengths to have a 50-50 chance at taking me out. I think I'm a secret. So if I can get rid of the people in on that secret, well, then nobody's looking for me anymore.
Does that hold true for me?
Kevin wanted to know.
If they're relying on this to get to me, do you think I might be a secret too?
It's logical.
How will you know who's in on it?
If I could be in D.C. when I send my little note to Karsten, I could watch to see who he goes running to. If it's really a secret, they won't be able to do it in the office.
They'll know you're close. The IP will give you away.
Maybe we could work together in a limited way. One of you could send the email for me from a distance.
What's your experience in surveillance?
Kevin demanded abruptly. I've had a lot of practice in the last few years.
Do you have any formal training?
I'm a scientist, not a field agent. He nodded.
I'll do it.
She shook her head. You're dead again, remember? You and Daniel get to disappear now. Don't look a gift horse in the mouth.
That's a stupid saying. If the Trojans had looked in the horse's mouth, they might have won that war.
Forget the saying. I'm trying to make things up to Daniel. Daniel was quietly watching the back and forth again.
Look, Oleander, I have had training. A lot. No one is going to catch me watching, and I will see more than you will. I have a place to stash Daniel where he'll be totally safe, so that's not an issue. And if you're right, and this Karsten guy goes running to his co-conspirators, he'll show me who in the agency thought this up. I'll see who put Danny in danger to get to me. Then I can clean up my problem, and you can clean up yours.
She thought it through, trying to be objective. It was hard to keep her dislike for Daniel's brother from coloring her analysis. That dislike wasn't fair. Wouldn't she have felt the same way as Kevin if it were her sibling shackled to a table, done the same things insofar as she was capable? But she still really wished she could inject him with something agonizing, just once. First of all, don't call me Oleander, she said. He smirked. Second, I see what you're saying. But how do we coordinate? I've got to go under for a while. She pointed to her face.
You owe her for that, Daniel said. If you have a safe place for me, maybe she should go there too. At least until her injuries have healed. I don't owe her anything, except maybe another punch in the face, Kevin growled.
Daniel bridled and took a step toward his brother. Kevin held up his hands in an I surrender motion and sighed.
But we're going to want to move quick, so that might be the easiest arrangement. Besides, then she can give us a ride. The plane's a loss. I had to bail out on the way down. I had us hiking out of here.
Daniel opened his eyes wide in disbelief. Kevin laughed at his expression, then turned to her with a smile. He looked at the dog, then back to her, and his smile got bigger.
I think I might enjoy having you at the ranch, Oleander.
She gritted her teeth. If Kevin had a safe house, that would solve a lot of her problems, and she could spike his food with a violent laxative before she left.
Her name is Alex, Daniel corrected. I mean, I know it's not, but that's what she goes by.
He looked at her.
Alex is okay, right?
It's as good as any other name. I'll stick with it for now. She looked at Kevin. You and the dog are in the back. Chapter 11. Once upon a time, when she was a young girl named Juliana, Alex used to fantasize about family road trips. She and her mother had always flown on the few vacations they took, if duty visits to ancient grandparents in Little Rock actually qualified as vacations. Her mother, Judy, didn't like to drive long distances. It made her nervous. Judy had often said that far more people were killed in car accidents than in plane crashes, though she was a white-knuckle flyer, too.
Juliana had grown up unfazed by the dangers associated with travel, or germs, or rodents, or tight spaces, or any of the many other things that upset Judy. By default, she had to be the level-headed one. Like most only children, Juliana thought siblings would be the cure to the loneliness of her long afternoons doing homework at the kitchen table while she waited for Judy to get home from the dentist's office she managed. Juliana looked forward to college and dormitories and roommates as a dream of companionship, except when she got there, she found that her life of relative solitude and adult responsibility had rendered her unsuited to cohabitation with normal 18-year-olds. So the sibling fantasy took a beating, and by her junior year, she had her own small studio apartment. The fantasy about a big, warm family road trip, however, had survived. Until today. To be fair, she would probably have been in a better mood if her entire body hadn't felt like one huge, throbbing bruise. Also, she had instigated the first argument, though quite unintentionally. When she drove across the county line, she'd rolled the window down and tossed out the small tracker she'd removed from Daniel's leg. She hadn't wanted to carry it with her for long, just in case, but she also didn't want to leave it right in the middle of her last base of operations. She thought she'd removed most of the evidence, but one could never be sure. Whenever she could muddy the trail, she took the time to do so. In the rearview mirror, she saw Kevin sit forward. He'd been able to retrieve a backpack he'd thrown from the plane when he jumped. Now he and Daniel looked fairly normal in jeans and long-sleeved t-shirts, one black, one gray, and Kevin had two new handguns.
"What was that?"
Kevin asked. "Daniel's tracker."
"What?"
Kevin and Daniel said together. They spoke over each other.
"I did have a tracker?"
Daniel asked.
"What did you do that for?"
Kevin demanded. The dog looked up at Kevin's tone, but then seemed to decide everything was fine and stuck his face out the window again. She turned to Daniel first, looking up at him from under the ball cap that was supposed to be keeping her mangled face in shadow. "How did you think your brother found you?"
"He tracked me? But where was it?"
"Sore spot on your inner right thigh. Keep the incision clean. Try not to let it get infected."
"Do you know what a pain it was to get that in place?"
Kevin grumbled. "If you can track it, so can someone else. I didn't want to take chances with our position." Daniel turned around in the passenger seat to stare at his brother.
How could I not know about this? Do you remember, about 2 years after the tramp left you, a hot leggy blonde at that bar you go to when you're depressed? What's it called?"
"Lou's."
"How do you even know about that? I never told you. Wait, did you have me followed?" "I was worried about you after the tramp."
"Her name is Lainey."
"Whatever. I never liked her for you."
"When did you ever like a girl for me?"
"As far as I can recall, you only ever liked girls who wanted you. You took it as an insult if someone preferred me." "The point is, you weren't yourself. But having you followed was unrelated to the who followed me. It was just for a few months."
"Who?"
"Some buddies of mine, not in the agency. A few cops I had a relationship with, a PI, for a little while."
"What were they looking for?"
"Just making sure you were okay, that you weren't going to jump off a bridge or anything." "I can't believe you. Of all the..." "Wait a minute. The blonde? You mean that girl, what was her name, Kate? The one who bought me a drink and she was a spy?"
She saw Kevin grinning in the rearview mirror.
"No, she was actually a hooker. Kate isn't her real name. Apparently, no one on the entire planet besides me uses his or her real name. I am living in a world of lies. I don't even know Alex's given name."
"Juliana," she said at the same time Kevin did. They cast irritated looks at each other.
"He knew?"
Daniel asked her, offended. "It came up while you were unconscious. It's the name I was given at birth, but it's really not me anymore. It doesn't mean much to me. I'm Alex for now." Daniel frowned, not entirely mollified.
"Anyway,"
Kevin went on in the tone of someone who was telling a joke he really enjoyed,
"the blonde was supposed to get you back to your place, but you told her that your divorce wasn't finalized yet, and it didn't feel right."
Kevin laughed raucously.
"I couldn't believe it when I heard.
but it was so you. I don't even know why I was surprised.
Hilarious. But I don't see how that little exchange got a tracking device into my leg.
It didn't. I just really liked that story. Anyway, that's what was such a pain. The hooker was easy to set up, and if you'd taken her home, having the tracker placed would have been enjoyable for you, at least. Getting you into your GP's office was a lot more work, but eventually I got a temp in the front office to call you in for a checkup. When you got there, you saw one of the new partners, a guy you'd never seen before.
Daniel's mouth popped open in disbelief.
He told me I had a tumor. A benign tumor, which he took out right there in the office with a local anesthetic and immediately assured you was nothing. He didn't even charge you. Don't make it into a bigger thing than it was.
Are you serious? How could you? Daniel was shouting at full volume now.
How do you justify these things to yourself? All these years you've been manipulating me, treating me like some laboratory animal who exists for your own amusement.
Hardly, Danny. I've been putting myself out trying to keep you safe. The agency wanted me to play dead from the very start, but I couldn't do that to you. Not after Mom and Dad. So I made a lot of promises and spent all my free weekends flying to Milwaukee to be a criminal.
Daniel's voice was calmer when he answered.
I drove. And was all that really necessary? Ask the poison girl. These kinds of jobs aren't for family people.
Daniel looked at her.
Is that true?
Yes. They like to recruit orphans, preferably only children. Like your brother told you before, relationships give the bad guys leverage. His tone mellowed further.
Are you an orphan?
I'm not sure. Never met my father. He could still be alive somewhere.
But your mother?
Uterine cancer. I was 19.
I'm sorry.
She nodded. There was a brief, very pleasurable moment of silence. Alex held her breath and prayed for it to last.
When I did finally let you think I was dead, Kevin began.
Alex turned the radio on and started searching through stations. Kevin did not get the hint. Daniel just stared through the windshield.
I was just starting with Enrique de la Fuentes. I could tell in the first few days that it was going to get out of hand. I knew what he'd done to the families of his enemies. It was time to set you free.
Free yourself from the visitation charade, you mean, Daniel muttered.
Alex found a classical station and turned it up so she could hear it over Kevin's voice.
That's when I put the tracker in. I needed to know you were okay. No one was watching you anymore, just me.
Daniel grunted in disbelief. The music's volume was making Alex's head hurt more. She turned it down again.
It ended badly with the agency. The plan was to wait until things died down and I was forgotten, then get the face fixed. Eventually, I was coming back for you, kid. You wouldn't have recognized me at first, but I wasn't going to leave you thinking you were alone your whole life.
Daniel stared straight ahead. She wondered if he believed what his brother was saying. He was staggering under the weight of so many different kinds of betrayal. What happened with the agency? Alex asked. She really didn't want to get involved with this conversation, but it didn't look like Daniel was going to pursue it. Before joining this unlikely alliance, it hadn't mattered much to her one way or the other how Kevin had left the CIA. Now this information was important. It affected her, too.
When the job with the virus was done and De La Fuentes was out of the picture, the agency wanted to pull me back in, but there were still some loose ends that bugged me. I wanted to nail it all down. It wouldn't have taken too much longer, and I was in a very unique position of power with the cartel. It was also a good opportunity to influence what happened there, who took over, what their agenda might be, while also getting solid information on the new structure. I couldn't believe the agency was calling me in. I refused to leave. I thought I had explained myself clearly, but I guess they didn't believe me. They must have thought I'd gone rogue, that I'd flipped and was choosing the cartel. Still makes no sense to me.
He shook his head.
I thought they knew me better.
What did they do?
Daniel asked.
They burned me. Ratted me out as an agent. Told people I'd kill De La Fuentes. And those people came for revenge.
And got that revenge, as far as the CIA knew, she guessed.
Exactly.
Did you kill him? Daniel asked. De La Fuentes?
Part of the job.
Have you killed a lot of people? Do you really want to know?
Daniel waited silently, not looking back.
Okay, fine. I've killed around 45 people, maybe more. I can't be sure about the number. You don't always have time to check for a pulse. Do you understand why I had to keep you separated from my life?
Daniel looked at Alex now.
Have you ever killed anyone?
3 times.
3. Oh, the people your company sent after you.
Yes.
Don't act like that makes her better than me,
Kevin interjected, angry.
I wasn't, Daniel started to say.
It was Kevin's turn to shout.
Ask her how many people she tortured before you. Ask her how long for each of them. How many hours? How many days? I just shoot people. Clean and fast. I would never do what she does to anyone. Especially not an innocent civilian like... Shut up, Daniel snapped. Just stop talking. Don't make this about her. Whatever pain she caused me, remember, you caused me more. It hurt more, and it lasted for much, much longer. You say you had a good reason. So did she. She didn't know she'd been lied to, that she'd been manipulated. I know how that feels. As if she's just some blameless bystander here. I said shut up!
Daniel bellowed the last 2 words at a deafening decibel. Alex cringed. The dog whined, pulling its face inside and staring at its master.
Easy,
Kevin said, maybe to the dog. Daniel noticed her reaction.
Are you okay?
Actually, on top of a lot of other uncomfortable injuries, I've got a splitting headache.
I'm sorry.
Don't worry about it.
You look like you're going to crash, figuratively and literally. Want me to drive? You could try to get a nap.
She thought about that for a minute. She'd always had to do things on her own, but that was okay because then she knew they were done right. She didn't have someone to take turns driving with, but that was also okay because then she didn't have to trust someone. Trust was a killer. Still, she knew her limits. There was something so luxurious about the idea of being able to sleep and travel at the same time. And she did trust Daniel not to hurt her, not to betray her. Knowing it could be a huge mistake, she still trusted him.
Thank you, she said.
That would be really nice. I'll pull over at the next exit. The words sounded odd to her as they came out of her mouth, like something someone would say on television, lines from one actor to another. But she supposed this was how normal human interactions generally sounded. She just didn't have a lot of those in her life. The silence was lovely for the 2 miles it took to get to the next exit. The peace made her even sleepier. Her eyelids were already doing the involuntary slow blink as she pulled off onto the dirt shoulder. No one spoke while they made the exchange. Kevin's head lolled back on his seat, eyes closed. Daniel touched her shoulder lightly as he passed her. Tired as she was, she didn't fall asleep immediately. At first, she thought it was the weirdness of having the car moving beneath her. Her body assumed from long habit that she would be the one at the wheel, and knew sleep was not allowed. She peeked at Daniel a few times from under her hat, just as reassurance. He knew how to drive a car. It was okay to relax. Sure, the seat was uncomfortable, but not much worse than her usual nighttime setup. She'd taught herself to get rest where she could, but her head felt too unrestrained. As soon as she realized this, she knew it was the gas mask she was missing. It had become part of her sleep ritual. Understanding the problem helped. She pulled her baseball cap farther down over her sore face and told herself to relax. She'd strung no wires today, no poison gas threatened. Everything was okay, she promised herself. It was dark when she woke up. She felt stiff, incredibly sore, and hungry. She also really had to pee. She wished she could have stayed asleep longer and thus avoided all of these unpleasant feelings, but the brothers were arguing again. She'd been out for a long time, she knew, so she couldn't blame them for forgetting her, but she wished they hadn't been arguing about her when she awakened.
But she isn't pretty, Kevin was saying as she began to surface.
You don't even know what she looks like, Daniel replied angrily. You mauled her face before you had a chance to introduce yourself.
It ain't just about the face, kid. She's built like a skinny 10-year-old boy.
You are the reason why women think all men are dogs. Also, the term is sylphid.
You read too many books. You don't read enough. I call it how it is. You have limited perception.
Hey, it's okay, Alex interrupted. There was no graceful way into this conversation, but she didn't want to pretend to be asleep. No offense taken. She pulled the hat off her face and wiped away the drool that had leaked from her damaged lip.
Sorry, Daniel muttered.
Don't worry about it. I needed to wake up.
No, I mean him.
Your brother's low opinion of my charms is its own special kind of compliment.
Daniel laughed. Good point.
Kevin snorted. Alex stretched and then groaned.
Let me guess. When you pictured the mad scientist's female partner, the mysterious Oleander, you saw a blonde, right?
She glanced at his face, suddenly rigid.
Yes, definitely a blonde. Large breasts, long tan legs, full lips, and huge blue doe eyes. Did I get it all? Or was there a French accent, too?
Kevin didn't respond. She glanced back at him. He stared out the window as if he weren't listening to her.
Got it in one, she laughed.
He was always a fan of the obvious, Daniel said.
I never saw one of those on the job, Alex told Daniel. I'm not saying such a creature wouldn't have the brains necessary, but really, why spend decades buried in unglamorous research when there are so many other options?
I've seen girls like that on the job,
Kevin muttered.
Sure, agents, Alex allowed. That's a sexy job. Exciting.
But trust me, lab coats really aren't that figure-flattering, despite the slutty Halloween costume version. Kevin went back to looking out the window.
How are you feeling? Daniel asked.
Ouch.
Oh, sorry.
She shrugged. We should find a place to pause. I'm not going to be able to eat in a restaurant without someone calling the cops on you two. We'll have to get a motel somewhere, and then somebody's going to have to go out for groceries.
Room service not an option?
Daniel wondered.
Those types of hotels notice when you pay cash,
Kevin explained before she could.
Sorry, bro. We'll have to rough it for a night.
Have you been driving all day? She asked.
No. Kev and I switched out a couple of times.
Can't believe I slept through all that.
I think you needed it.
Yeah. I guess I've been burning the candle at both ends for too long.
So little time,
Kevin muttered.
So many people to torture.
True story, she agreed lightly, just to annoy him. Daniel laughed. Daniel seemed so kind and gentle, more so than anyone she'd ever known, but he was definitely weird, possibly unstable. They found a small place on the outskirts of Little Rock. Alex thought she ought to recognize the city just a bit, but nothing reminded her of her childhood visits to the grandparents. Maybe the city had grown too much in the years since she'd been here. Maybe she was just in the wrong part. Somewhere nearby, her mother and her grandparents were buried. She wondered if that should make her feel something. But the place didn't really matter. She was no closer to them for being closer to the remains of their genetic material. Kevin insisted on making the arrangements at the front desk. It was probably for the best that Kevin took the lead now. Alex was out of commission, thanks to her face, and even if she had looked fine, he was still the expert. She knew only what she'd learned through theoretical research and a couple of years of trial and error. Kevin had been taught so much more, and he'd proved it all in the field. Daniel wasn't even an option. Oh, his face was fine, but his instincts were all wrong. Case in point, the way he argued when he saw that Kevin had gotten them only one room. It hadn't occurred to him that a hotel clerk would be more likely to remember a man who came in alone, yet paid cash for two rooms. And when Kevin parked three doors down from their actual room, Daniel didn't understand why. Misdirection, they explained. But it was foreign to everything Daniel had ever known, every habit he'd formed. He thought like a normal person, who'd never had anything to hide. There was a lot he was going to have to learn. He even asked if they should get permission before they brought the dog into the room. It had only one bed, but Alex had been asleep for 12 hours straight, so she was happy to be the lookout. Kevin went out for a half hour and came back with cellophane-wrapped sandwiches, sodas, and a large bag of dog food. Alex scarfed her sandwich down and then chased it with a handful of Motrin. Einstein ate just as enthusiastically as she had, straight from the bag, but Daniel and Kevin were more relaxed about the food.
Apparently, she'd missed a couple of stops at the drive-thru, too. A quick assessment of herself in the scratched bathroom mirror was not encouraging. Her nose was swollen to twice its normal size, red and bulbous. On the plus side, odds were it would heal up differently than it began, thus changing her appearance a little. Maybe not as aesthetically pleasing a result as she would get from plastic surgery, but probably less painful on the whole, or at least faster. Her black eyes were an impressive contradiction to their name, boasting a rainbow of colors from jaundice yellow to bilious green to sickly purple. Her split lip puffed out from either side of the scabby fissure like flesh balloons, and she hadn't even known you could develop bruises inside your mouth. There was one stroke of luck. She still had all her teeth. Getting a bridge would have been tricky. It was going to be a while before she could do anything. She really hoped Kevin's safe house lived up to the name. It worried her to be headed into the unknown. She hadn't prepared anything, and that was 100% unnerving. She showered and brushed her teeth, a more painful ordeal than usual, and slipped into her black leggings and a clean white tee. She'd reached the limits of her wardrobe. Hopefully, the safe house had a washing machine. Daniel was asleep when she came back out, stretched out on his stomach with one hand under the pillow and one arm falling over the edge of the bed, long fingers brushing the faded carpet. His sleeping face was really something else. Like before, when he was unconscious, his innocence and serenity didn't seem to belong in the same world that she did. Kevin wasn't in the room, and neither was the dog. Though she assumed the dog had needs, she couldn't bring her alert level down from orange-red until they'd returned. Kevin didn't acknowledge her, but the dog sniffed her once as it passed. Kevin lay down flat on his back, his arms at his sides, and immediately closed his eyes. He didn't move again for 6 hours. The dog jumped onto the end of the bed and curled up with its tail over Daniel's legs and its head pillowed on Kevin's feet. Alex sat in the only chair. The carpet was just too questionable for her to lie on the floor, and bent over her laptop, surfing the news. She wasn't sure when Daniel's disappearance would be noticed, or if it would be broadcast when it was. Probably not. Grown men wandered off all the time. For example, her father. That sort of thing was too common to make waves, unless there was some sensational detail, like dismembered body parts in his apartment. There was also no story yet about the crash of a single prop plane in West Virginia. No fatalities or injured found, still trying to locate the owner. But she doubted the news would merit more than just a note in a local online paper. When it did surface, there would be nothing in the report that would catch anyone's attention in D.C. She exhausted her search for information that might endanger them. It seemed that for now they were in the clear on that front, at least. What was Karsten thinking right at this moment? What was he planning? She wasn't due to deliver Daniel until Monday before school, and it was still only Saturday, well, almost Sunday. The department knew she wasn't going to crack Daniel. He had nothing to spill. They had to know she would eventually learn of the identical twins' existence. They must have been pretty sure of Kevin's status in the land of the living. They had expected him to be drawn out into the open early in the game, and they'd been right about that. The only thing they hadn't foreseen was that the torturer and the assassin might have a conversation. It would never have shaken out this way without Daniel's interference. He'd been a ploy for them, just a pawn moved into peril to lure the more critical players into the center of the board. They never would have guessed that he'd be a catalyst for change. She planned to hold true to her side of the bargain. She would take the role of victor, though that was really the losing role, and let Daniel and Kevin be dead. Dead again, in Kevin's case. But oh, how she wished that she could be the one to die. Wouldn't it be easy for the department to believe that someone like Kevin Beach, who'd toppled a cartel, had succeeded where they had failed? Wouldn't it make sense for them to stop looking then? What would it be like to disappear, but this time with no one searching for her? She sighed. Fantasies only made it harder. There was no point indulging in them. The men were both pretty well under, she was sure, so she dug into her bag and pulled out the pressurized canister she'd selected earlier. She had only the two gas masks,
So nothing deadly tonight. Just the airborne sleeping agent she'd had hooked up to her computer yesterday. It was enough. It would let her control the outcome if someone discovered them. After she'd strung the leads, only a double line, she wouldn't have to arm or disarm from outside the room tonight, she settled back into her chair. She glanced at the twins. Both were deep, peaceful sleepers. She wondered if that was a healthy habit for a spy. Maybe Kevin actually trusted her, enough to sound the alarm at the very least, and maybe even to deal with the problem without killing them all. She and the brothers were strange bedfellows indeed. How odd it was, watching over them. It felt wrong, and she'd expected that. But it also felt good, satisfying some need she'd never known was there. And that she hadn't expected. She spent some time thinking about her analysis of the situation, searching for flaws in her theory, but the more she looked at it, the more it made sense. Even the woeful lack of evolution in her would-be assassins, by the third try, someone should have been aware of her system and changed the approach, made sense in this light. There had never been any operation, just expendable individuals sent after her with little or no briefing. She thought through every conjecture two or three times and felt more confident than ever that she finally understood the ones hunting her. And then she was bored. What she wanted to do was log on to the website of Columbia University's pathology program and read the latest doctoral dissertations, but it wasn't safe to do that while the department was actively trying to locate her, which she was certain they were. The department couldn't trace every connection anyone made to her old interests, but this one might be too obvious. With a sigh, she put in earbuds, opened up YouTube, and started watching a tutorial about field stripping a rifle. It probably wasn't anything she'd ever need to know, but it couldn't hurt. Kevin woke up at 5:30 on the dot. He just sat up, as alert as if someone had flipped a switch to turn him on. He patted the dog once and headed toward the door. It took him only a second to notice the gas mask she was wearing and jerked to a stop. The dog, right on his heels, paused too and pointed its nose her direction, looking for whatever had upset its master. "Give me a sec," Alex said. She got awkwardly to her feet, still aching and sore, whether more or less than at the beginning of the night, she couldn't tell, and walked stiffly to the door to undo her security precautions.
"I didn't say you could do that,"
Kevin said. She didn't look at him. "I didn't ask for your permission," he grunted. It took her only a few seconds to clear his path. She removed her mask and used it to gesture to the door. "Knock yourself out."
"Knock you out,"
she thought she heard him mutter as he passed her, but it was too low for her to be sure. The dog followed him, tail swishing so fast it blurred. She imagined the guy at the front desk probably wasn't paying any attention at this hour, but she still thought Kevin was pressing their luck a little. A screaming match with the management wasn't going to help them stay incognito. She rummaged through the food Kevin had bought last night. The remaining sandwiches weren't as appetizing as they had been 8 hours ago, but there was a box of cherry Pop-Tarts she'd missed before. She was working her way through the second pastry in the sleeve when Kevin and the dog came back.
"You want to catch a few hours?"
he asked her. "If you don't mind driving, I can sleep in the car again. Better to get where we're going." He nodded once, then went to the bed and lightly kicked his brother. Daniel moaned and rolled onto his back, covering his head with a pillow. "Is that necessary?" she asked.
"Like you said, better to get going. Danny's always had a problem with the snooze button."
Kevin yanked the pillow off Daniel's head.
"Let's go, kid."
Daniel blinked owlishly for a few seconds, and then she watched his face change as the memories hit, as he realized where he was and why. It hurt to see the piece of his dreams crumble into the devastation of his new waking reality. His eyes darted around the room until he found her. She tried to make her expression reassuring, but the damage done to her face would probably trump any arrangement of her features. She searched for something to say, something that would make the world a little less dark and scary for him. "Pop-Tart?" she offered. He blinked again.
Okay.
Chapter 12. Alex did not approve of the safe house. They'd reached it late in the afternoon. She'd kept her nap to just 4 hours during the drive. She didn't want to be on a nocturnal schedule forever. So she'd been awake as they turned off the highway onto a 2-lane surface road, then to an even smaller road, until finally they were on a 1-lane dirt path. Calling it a road was too complimentary. Sure, it was hard to find, but once you did, well, there was only one way out. She never would have chosen to live backed into a corner like this.
"Relax, killer," Kevin told her when she complained. "No one is looking for us out here."
"We should have switched plates."
"Took care of it while you were snoring."
"You weren't actually snoring," Daniel said quietly. He was driving now while Kevin directed.
"But it is true that we stopped at a junkyard and stole a few license plates."
"So we're trapped out here on a dead-end lane while Mr. Smith goes to Washington," she muttered.
"It's secure,"
Kevin snapped in a tone that was clearly intended to close the discussion.
"So don't go stringing your death traps through my house."
She didn't answer. She would do what she wanted when he was gone. At least his setup was far away from neighbors. They drove for at least 15 minutes down the dirt path without seeing any evidence of other human beings. That would keep the collateral damage low if for some reason she felt the need to burn everything to the ground. They arrived at a tall gate flanked on either side by a heavy-duty chain-link fence with a crowning line of spiraled razor wire. The fence ran so far off into the distance, to both the right and the left, that she couldn't see where it turned or ended. Beside the gate, there was a very serious-looking no trespassing sign, with an additional notice below that read, "Enter at your own risk. Owners are not liable for injuries or harm that may result from trespassing."
"Subtle," she said. "It gets the job done," Kevin responded.
He pulled a key fob from his pocket and clicked a button. The gate swung open and Daniel drove through. She should have expected that his safe house would be so obvious. After a few more miles, the house came into view like a mirage, its dull gray second story hovering on a light haze over the dry yellow grass. Here and there, a few dark, scrubby trees studded the grassland with some texture. Over it all, the washed-out blue sky stretched to infinity. She'd never been totally comfortable with the Great Plains. She'd been a city girl for too long. This felt so exposed, so unanchored. Like a strong wind could just erase everything in sight, which probably did happen around these parts biannually. She really hoped it wasn't tornado season. The rest of the house was revealed as they topped a low rise in the mostly flat road. It was large but dilapidated, 2 stories high with a rickety porch wrapped around half the ground floor. The coarse dead grass ended about 20 yards from the house, replaced by sand-colored gravel that covered the dirt up to the cracked lattice that attempted to camouflage the foundation. The only breaks in the monotone vegetation were the house, the stunted trees, the reddish scar of the dirt lane, and then several indistinct shapes that were in motion, roving along the edges of the road. She'd seen a lot of cows on the way in, but these animals looked too small to be cows. They did seem to be furry, ranging in color from black to brown to white to a combination of all three. The shapes started to converge on the car, moving a lot faster than cows. Einstein's tail began wagging so ferociously that it sounded like a small helicopter in the back seat.
"What is this place, Kev?"
"My retirement plan."
The animals reached the car, half a dozen dogs of various sizes.
"Fantastic," Alex thought.
One could have been Einstein's twin, another was gargantuan, looking like it was more clearly related to equines than canines. She recognized a Doberman, 2 Rottweilers, and a traditionally colored German Shepherd. On the approach, the dogs had been totally silent and aggressive in their posture, but as soon as they saw Einstein, all the tails started wagging, and they shared in a raucous chorus of barks.
"I train dogs for placement as guard dogs, commercial and private ownership. I also sell a few to families who just want a really well-behaved animal."
"How do you keep this under the radar?" she wanted to know.
"You can drive, Danny. They'll get out of the way," Kevin instructed.
Daniel had come to a stop when the dog surrounded the car. Now he eased carefully forward and, as promised, the dogs moved to flank them and follow them in. Kevin then addressed Alex.
Nothing is in my name. No one ever sees my face. I have a partner for that.
As he spoke, she saw a figure walk out onto the porch, a large man wearing a cowboy hat. She couldn't make out any other details from this distance.
Everybody knows the dog ranch is out here. Nobody bothers with us. It has no connection to my past life,
Kevin was saying, but she wasn't paying much attention. Her eyes were riveted on the man waiting at the top of the porch stairs. Kevin noticed her preoccupation.
What? Arnie? He's good people. I trust him with my life.
She frowned at that expression. Daniel was looking at her, too. He started to slow.
Is there a problem, Alex?
He asked in a low voice. She heard Kevin's teeth grind behind her. It was obvious how much he hated the way Daniel turned to her for guidance. It's just... She frowned, then gestured to Daniel and his brother. This is already a lot for me, the two of you. I don't know how to trust even you, let alone another person, who only this one vouches for. She pointed at Kevin, and he scowled.
Well, that's just tough, Shorty, Kevin answered. Because this is your best option, and the guy I vouch for is part of the deal. If you want to execute this plan of yours, you'll have to suck it up.
It will be okay, Daniel reassured her. He put his right hand lightly over her left. Stupid how something like that could make you feel better. It wasn't like Daniel comprehended even the most basic elements of the danger they were in. But still, her heartbeat decelerated a tiny bit, and her right hand, unconsciously clenched around the door handle, relaxed. Daniel drove slowly. The dogs kept up with them pretty easily until they stopped on the gravel. She was able to get a better look at the man waiting for them. Arnie was a tall, heavy-set man, part Latino, maybe part Native American. He could have been 45, but he could have been 10 years older, too. His face was lined, but it looked like the kind of leathering that was due to wind and sun rather than age. His hair, which hung several inches below the hat, was salt and pepper gray. He stared at them without any emotion as they stopped, though there was no way he could have expected a third passenger, even if Kevin had told him about Daniel. Einstein exploded out of the car as soon as Kevin cracked the door open and immediately set to sniffing and being sniffed. Daniel and Kevin climbed out almost as quickly, eager to stretch their long legs. Alex was more hesitant. There were a lot of dogs, and the brown-spotted horse dog looked to be taller on all fours than she was standing. They seemed to be occupied with one another at the moment, but who knew how they would react to her?
"Don't be such a coward, Oleander," Kevin called.
Most of the dogs had converged on him now, nearly forcing him to the ground with the combined weight of their greeting. Daniel came around the car and opened the door for her, then offered his hand. She sighed, irritated, and got out on her own. Her shoes crunched on the gravel, but the dogs didn't seem to notice her.
"Arnie!" Kevin called over the sound of the happy dogs. "This is my brother Danny. He'll be staying here. And, a temporary guest, I suppose. Don't know what else to call her. Guest seems kind of over-positive, if you know what I mean."
"Your hospitality takes my breath away," Alex murmured. Daniel laughed, then climbed the stairs in two quick steps. He offered his hand to the stone-faced man, who didn't look as tall standing next to Daniel, and they shook.
"Nice to meet you, Arnie. My brother's told me nothing at all about you, so I look forward to getting to know you better." "Ditto, Danny,"
Arnie said. His voice was a rumbly baritone that sounded as if it wasn't used often enough to keep it running smoothly.
"And that's Alex. Don't listen to my brother. She's staying as long as she wants."
Arnie looked at her, focusing now. She waited for a reaction to the mess of her face, but he just regarded her coolly. "A pleasure," she said. He nodded.
"You can move your stuff inside," Kevin told them.
He tried to walk toward the stairs, but the dogs were weaving around his legs at high speed.
"Hey, boneheads! Attention!"
Like a small platoon of soldiers, the dogs immediately backed off a few paces, formed an actual line,
and froze with their ears up.
That's better. At ease.
The dogs sat down in unison, tongues lolling out and sharp-fanged smiles. Kevin joined them at the door.
Like I said, you can grab your stuff. Danny, there's a room for you at the top of the stairs on the right. As for you,
he looked down at Alex.
Well, I guess the room at the other end of the hall will work. I wasn't expecting extra company, so it's not fitted up as a bedroom.
I've got a cot. I don't have any stuff, Daniel said, and though she listened for it, she didn't hear any sadness in the words. He was putting up a good front.
Do you need help with yours, Alex?
She shook her head. I'll only take a few things in. The rest I'll stash somewhere outside the fence. Daniel raised his eyebrows in confusion, but Kevin was nodding. I've had to run out in the middle of the night before, she explained to Daniel, pitching her voice low, though Arnie could probably still hear. She had no idea how much he knew about Kevin's old job. Sometimes it's not so easy to get back to pick up your things. Daniel's brow creased. Some of the sadness she'd been expecting before flickered across his expression. This was a world not many people entered on purpose.
You don't need to worry about that here, Kevin said. We're secure.
Kevin was one of those people who had chosen this life, which made his every judgment suspect to her. Better to keep in practice, she insisted. Kevin shrugged.
If that's what you want, I know a place that might work.
The house was quite a bit nicer on the inside than the outside. She'd expected moldy wallpaper, 1970s oak paneling, sagging couches, linoleum, and formica. While there was still an attempt at a rustic theme, the fixtures were new and state-of-the-art. There were even granite countertops on the kitchen island under the elkhorn chandelier.
Wow, Daniel murmured.
But how many contractors were inside this place? She muttered to herself. Too many witnesses. Kevin heard, though she hadn't meant him to.
None, actually. Arnie used to be in construction. We got all the materials from across the state line and did the work ourselves. Well, mostly Arnie did it. Satisfied?
Alex pursed her balloon lips.
How did you two meet?
Daniel asked Arnie politely. She really ought to study Daniel, Alex thought, practice his ways of interacting. This was how to act like a normal person. Either she'd never really known how or she'd forgotten completely. She had her lines down for waitressing, for cubicle jobs. She knew how to respond in a work environment in the least memorable way. She knew how to talk to patients when she was doing her illicit doctor gig. Before that, she'd learned the best ways to pull answers from a subject. But outside of the prescribed roles, she always avoided contact. It was Kevin who answered Daniel's question.
Arnie was in a little trouble that related tangentially to a project I was working on a while back. He wanted out, and he gave me some very valuable information in exchange for my killing him.
The silent Arnie grinned widely.
We hit it off, Kevin continued, and kept in touch. When I decided to start preparing for retirement, I contacted him. Our needs and interests aligned perfectly.
Match made in heaven, Alex said in a sweet voice. Great, so people might be looking for him, too, she didn't add aloud. Kevin and Daniel went to the downstairs master to gather a wardrobe for Daniel and outfit him with toiletries. Alex showed herself upstairs, easily locating the small room Kevin had offered her. It would work. He was using it for storage right now, but there was enough space for her cot and personal things. One of the large plastic storage bins would make a decent substitute for a desktop. The bathroom was down the hall. It connected to both the hallway and what would be Daniel's bedroom. It had been a very long time since she'd shared a bathroom. At least this one was bigger and posher than she was used to. The brothers were still busy when she went back to the car to sort through her stuff. There were three dogs on the porch, one she was pretty sure was Einstein, one huge black Rottweiler, and a reddish-brown sad-faced dog with floppy ears who reminded her of the dog whose leg gets broken at the end of Lady and the Tramp. So that probably meant he was a hound dog or a bloodhound or something. She wasn't sure which was which. The Rottweiler and the hound started toward her with more interest than menace, but it was enough for her to take a huge step back toward the door.
Einstein raised his head and gave a low, cough-like bark, and the other two stopped. They sat down where they were, like they had when Kevin had given them the at-ease command. She wasn't sure if Einstein actually had the authority to give the other dogs orders. Did dogs recognize rank? So she moved cautiously along the porch, waiting for them to attack. They held their relaxed positions, just watching her curiously. As she passed, the hound's tail thumped loudly against the wooden slats of the floor, and she had the odd impression that he was playing up the sad eyes in anticipation of being petted. She hoped he wasn't too disappointed that she wasn't brave enough to try it. She dug through her things wedged in the trunk, pulling together an emergency kit and fitting it into a backpack. This she would keep with her at all times. She took most of her dirty clothes to wash inside. Hopefully there was a washing machine, but left the businessy stuff with the other bags in the trunk. She had to have at least one set of clothes with her off-property stash. She'd run out one memorable night, after Assassin 2 was gassed trying to cut her throat, in just her underwear, and had to steal a neighbor's coveralls out of the back of his work van. She'd learned that lesson, and to always sleep in pajamas that could double as daytime clothes. Even with the cot, it was an easy load to take up the stairs. She went back for one of the duffel bags, this one containing her basic lab gear. She shouldn't waste the downtime when she could be prepping. As she passed the master bedroom, she heard squabbling, and the sound made her happy to be out of the way of it. The lab setup was a quick process after so much practice. One of her glass flasks was chipped, but it looked like it was still usable. She pieced her rotary evaporator together and then laid out a few condensers and two stainless steel vessels. She'd used almost all of her survive, and the way this week was going, she would probably need more. She had plenty of D-phenylalanine, but she was disappointed when she checked on her opioid store. Less than she'd thought. Not enough to synthesize more survive, and she had only one dose left. She was still scowling at her lack of supplies when she heard Kevin calling up the stairs.
"Hey, Oleander, tick-tock."
By the time she got through the front door, Kevin was already in the sedan, Daniel in the passenger seat. When Kevin spotted her hesitating on the porch, he held the horn down for one annoyingly long blast. She walked as slowly as possible to the car and climbed into the back seat with a frown. Dog hair was going to get all over her. They drove along the same slender dirt lane out through the gate and a few miles farther before turning onto an even less pronounced road that headed into a mostly westerly direction. This road was nothing more than two tire tracks worn into the grass. They followed it for about 6 or 7 miles, she guessed. For the first few miles, she caught glimpses of the ranch's fence line, but after that, they were too far west for her to see it anymore. "Is this your land, too?"
"Yes, after passing through a few other names. This parcel is owned by a corporation that is not affiliated in any way with the parcel the ranch is on. I do know how to do this, you know."
"Of course." The landscape started to change on her right. The yellow-white grass cut off at a strangely even border, and beyond that, the ground turned to level, bare red dirt. When they started to wind back to the north toward that border, she was surprised to see that the red dirt was actually a riverbank. The water was the same color as the red bank, and it moved smoothly west, without rapids or obstacles. It was about 40 feet across at the widest point she could see. She watched the flow of the water as they drove roughly parallel to it, fascinated by its existence here in the middle of the dry grassland. For all its smooth progress, the river seemed to be moving fairly quickly. There was no fence this time. A crumbling down barn, grayed by the sun, sat about 50 yards from the road, looking as if it had reached the end of its very long life, and was only looking for the right weather system to put it out of its misery. She'd seen hundreds just like it on their quick tour through Arkansas and Oklahoma. It was nowhere near as nice as her milking barn. Kevin turned toward it, driving right through the grass now. She couldn't see any official road or pathway. She waited in the running car while he jumped out to unlock the massive antique padlock and swing the doors open. Outside, In the brilliant light of the open, cloudless sky, it was impossible to see anything inside the murky interior. He was back quickly to drive the car into the darkness. This time, the inside matched the outside's promise. Dim light filtered through the slats of the barn to illuminate piles of corroded farm equipment, most of a rusted tractor, the shells of a few ancient cars, and a massive stack of dusty hay in the back, half covered with a tarp. Nothing worth stealing or even examining more closely. If anyone bothered to break in here, the only valuable thing he would find was shade. When the engine cut off, she thought she could just make out the rush of the river. They couldn't be more than a couple hundred yards away from it. "This will work," she said. "I'll stick my stuff in a corner, and you can use this car when you head back."
"Roger that."
She piled her four rectangular duffels into a shadowy crevice, partially hidden behind a stack of spider-webbed firewood. The webs were dusty. Kevin was rummaging near a pile of blackened metal, maybe parts for another tractor, and came back with a tattered old tarp, which he spread over her bags. "Nice touch," she approved.
"It's all in the presentation." "I guess you haven't gotten around to fixing this place up yet," Daniel commented, one hand on the closest car shell. "I kind of like it how it is," Kevin said. "Let me give you a tour, just in case you need something while I'm gone. Which you won't, but still."
She nodded thoughtfully. "Overpreparation is the key to success. It's kind of my mantra."
"Then you'll love this," Kevin said.
He walked to the half-tractor and bent down to fiddle with the lug nuts in the center of the huge flat tire.
"There's a keypad behind this hubcap."
He spoke directly to Daniel.
"The code is our birthday. Not too original, but I wanted you to be able to remember it easily. Same combination for the lock on the outside door."
A second later, the entire front face of the tire swung outward. It wasn't made of rubber. It was something stiffer and lighter, and it moved on hinges. Inside, an arsenal.
"Oh, yes," she breathed. "Batcave."
She immediately spotted a Sig Sauer that matched the gun she'd briefly stolen from him. He really didn't need to. Kevin gave her a puzzled look.
"Batman doesn't use guns."
"Whatever." Daniel was examining the hinges on the hidden door.
"This is very clever. Did Arnie make it?"
"No, I did. Thanks."
"I didn't know you were handy. And when did you have the chance to do this, what with toppling cartels and all that?"
"Downtime between jobs. I can't sit still or I go crazy."
He closed up the fake tire and then gestured to the car shell near where Daniel had been standing before.
"Lift the top of the battery and type in the same code."